Senate Judiciary and Public Safety Committee will come to order. For the record, the date is, well, the date is Valentine's Day, February 14th, 2012. Senator Brown, you have the first bill on the agenda. Did you bring us any candy or flowers to help you with your bill passage?
For a yes vote, I'll go get some.
Okay. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Before us, I have Senate File 1212, and this is a bill that deals with medical records for a deceased patient. You'll see on line 2.6, it's simply adding two words to the definition of patient, and those words are adult children. How this bill came about is a constituent in my district is experiencing the same medical condition her father had. Her father is deceased, and she cannot get access. She and her health care providers cannot get access to his records. You'll notice in definition that a surviving spouse could help her out, but there is not a surviving spouse. So this is going to help her and Minnesotans all over the state who are in a similar situation. If they're experiencing a medical condition that a deceased parent had, will allow them to have access to their medical records.
Do you have any witnesses at this time?
I do not have any witnesses. I've had no opposition to this bill.
Are there any questions from members? Hearing no questions, Senator Newman, would you move the bill?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. What does Senator Brown wish to go to the floor? Is that to another committee?
Yes.
Senator Brown, does this bill go directly to the floor, sir?
Yes.
I would so move, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Newman moves that Senate File 1212 be recommended to pass and move to the floor of the Senate. Further discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Bill carries.
Thank you.
Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Brown. The next bill is one that I am carrying. Senator Newman, would you do the honors?
Passed.
Senator Newman took off. I trust that he'll be back
so
by the time I
ever see anybody get treated by him. So.
I appreciate it, John.
I don't see flowers. Senator Loomer, I don't see flowers.
Senator Loomer, you are here on Senate File 1747. To your bill, Senator Loomer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate File 1747 is a bill that's being recommended by the Department of Corrections. It involves the Challenge Incarceration Program and the eligibility criteria, some of the changes and recommendations that they are suggesting. I have representatives from the department here that can explain the details and a little brief history of the need for this legislation.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Terry Carlson. I'm the Assistant Commissioner for the Facilities Division for the Minnesota Department of Corrections. Before I talk about this bill, I'd like to give just a little bit of background about the Challenge Incarceration Program. It's an early release program that was conceived and developed in 1992, and there was a program developed at the Will River Moose Lake Correctional Facility to house women and male nonviolent property and drug offenders for this early release program. The program changed throughout the years. At some point, I think it was 2004, we moved the women offenders up to the Togo facility to add more room for male offenders at the program because we had a longer waiting list for the men offenders. And then in 2007, we had a significant construction project at that facility, and the original capacity of the Willow River program had been 90 beds. And in 2007, it grew to 180 beds. As a result, we were adding more people into the program, and the capacity of that program was not met. Initially, it was challenging to get enough offenders to participate in the program based on our eligibility criteria at the time. In 2009, there was legislation to change the criteria significantly. Prior to 2009, the agency had a lot of discretion to make decisions about who would come into the program and who would not. And then in 2009, the discretion of the Commissioner of Corrections was taken away, and there were numerous offenders that we felt were potential public safety risks and kind of high visibility cases that we were concerned about coming into this early release program. So what we've done now is created language that we feel will meet our needs to keep our program at capacity, and the program at both the Willow River program and at Togo, the women's program, are full, and we do have waiting lists for these programs, and that's an ongoing goal for us. We want to keep the programs full. We want to keep a nice waiting list of offenders in the program. But what the bill does is gives us the ability to exclude some of those offenders that we're most concerned about. Again, as I said, it's an early release program. People spend 6 months in the facility phase of the program, and they can have up to 48 months remaining on their term of incarceration when they enter the program. So they spend 6 months at CIP, either at Willow River or at Togo, and then they enter into the community supervision phases of the program. So I'm just going to quickly walk you through the language. What we have done is in the first subdivision 3, item 1, added if an offender is committed to the commissioner's custody or any state or federal prison. Sometimes we have offenders who are serving time simultaneously to a Minnesota sentence in our facilities. And if their Minnesota sentence is one that would allow them to participate in the program, but their other crime from the other state or from the federal system is one of these exclusionary crimes, we think they should not be able to participate in the program. The second addition that we have is adding some crimes that would be excluded for participation that currently offenders with these crimes can participate. So drive-by shooting, criminal vehicular homicide or operation, and any other offense that they've committed to the Commissioner of Corrections that includes characteristics of death or great bodily harm to the victim as defined by statute, or if their commitment offense involves discharge of a firearm. In the second bullet of this information, what we've done is changed that offenders who were convicted within the preceding 10 years, what we'd like to see is offenders having been released from the commissioner's custody and care for 5 years rather than convicted in the past 10 years for any of those offenses. The next change is on item 4. If an offender is required to complete predatory offender registration, we feel they should not be included in this program. And also, offenders who have been reviewed by the commissioner and are being referred to the county for review for civil commitment as a sexual, psychopathic personality, sexual dangerous person, mentally ill, or mentally ill and dangerous to the public. Those offenders should also be included. In item 8, it's just a language cleanup. There's really no other change. It's just a technical change in that section. And in item 9, we're also suggesting that if an offender has received formal loss of privileges through our discipline system, that they should not be eligible to participate in the program until that sentence has expired. that sanction has expired. So they might get 10 days of LOP, which is loss of privileges, and they wouldn't be able to come into the program until they've completed that. And those are my changes.
Thank you, Ms. Carlson. Senator Lentz.
Thank you, Ms. Carlson. Could you explain to me the logic behind your provisions in lines 1.14 to 1.18, paragraph 2?
Ms. Carlson.
Oh, paragraph 2. 1.14. Mr. Chair and Senator Latz, the reason for the change is that there have been occasions where an offender would have been convicted of one of the offenses within the previous 10 years and may have just gotten out of prison, or they could be a release violator for that offense with a new sentence that gives them eligibility for that, for this program. And so changing it to being released from the commissioner's custody will keep them out of the program until they've completed that sentence.
So, Mr. Chairman, Ms. Carlson, it could have the effect of extending that ineligibility beyond 10 years from the date of the commission of the underlying disqualifying offense?
Ms. Carlson.
Mr. Chair and Senator Latz, it's possible that it would, yes.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Letts.
Ms. Carlson, I guess I'm a bit troubled by that whole provision, the existing as well as a new proposed terms. If the reason that a person was committed anew to the Commissioner of Corrections was not related to a violent act, if there was, you know, a technical violation of probation, if there was a commission of a new offense but a nonviolent offense, but because of their criminal history score, you know, resulted in a presumptive commit to the commissioner because of past acts going back 5, 10, 15, 20 years. Can you explain to me what the logic would be if, for example, someone committed a forgery but they had a violent, somewhat distant past, why they ought to be disqualified from the challenge incarceration program?
Ms.
On
Carlson.
The second time through after the commitment for the forgery?
Ms. Carlson.
Mr. Chair and Senator Latz, it's like the offenders, they don't have a clean slate. They have a history with us. And, you know, it's a concern if it's a violent crime that was in their past and they've reoffended and come back to prison. This is an early release program that's viewed as a privilege to the offenders. And so we think it makes good correctional sense from the public safety perspective to have some period of time for them to have been on supervision, to have been released, to have that clean slate before being again eligible for the program.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Lentz.
Ms. Carlson, isn't there something about the challenge incarceration program itself that is intended to make it, to make a prisoner more likely to not commit new violent crimes or new crimes when they get released? Not just a privilege for the inmates, but a benefit to the public safety as well?
Mr. Chair and Senator Latz, yes, absolutely. This is a very program-rich environment. The offenders participate in a rigorous daily program that involves education, cognitive thinking skills, chemical dependency treatment, and, you know, hard work as well as physical training and exercise. All components of this program are deemed to, you know, work towards helping this offender be successful upon release. That's the ultimate goal of the program.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Carlson, my concern, I guess, is that if they get recommitted for a nonviolent offense, and maybe they didn't have the benefit of the challenge incarceration program the first, you know, the last time through because they were disqualified. But the new offense might be one which wouldn't disqualify them by itself, and they might stand to benefit, and public safety might stand to benefit from their participation in the challenge incarceration program. It seems to me there might be some advantage to allowing them the opportunity to see if they can survive the rigors of the CIP and be successful with it, rather than just continue to, you know, hold them in custody without that benefit. What are your thoughts on that?
Mr. Chair and Senator Latz, I think there could be some offenders that would absolutely benefit from it. I agree with you on your point.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Limmer.
Mr. Chair, prior to, well, I don't know when we began some of the restrictions on the part of the commissioner by the legislature, but we had a time when the commissioner would be almost in full discretion of exercising judgment on which inmates would be eligible for such a program. And I've kicked it around a number of times, had a lot of discussion with the department on this, not the commissioner, but the department. And in some ways, I agree with Senator Latz that why would we be so prescriptive on some of these things? It's actually raised a lot of interest on my part to look into the history of why are we at this point now. And I don't know if it was just the judgment of some on the previous commissioner and the judgment that she may have used in placing people in this program. I don't know if it's just limited to that or if it goes back farther. And I think that council may have a little bit of history that would probably benefit all of us if we heard a little bit about it as far as the history of it. And if you wouldn't mind, perhaps Mr. Backus could give us a little rendition of what has occurred in recent years regarding this program.
Mr. Backus, do you have some information that will help us?
Mr. Chair and members, Assistant Commissioner Carlson did mention this. The change was really made in 2009. Prior to that, there were certain offenders who were designated as ineligible depending on their offense, and then there was certain eligibility criteria which still occurs. So, but at that time, it was the commissioner may select offenders who meet these eligibility requirements, and then the commissioner must limit the program to the following person. So in 2009, it was changed to basically shall. So they were required to select anyone who is not ineligible. And that's basically, I think, what's prompting this bill is that, you know, we need to expand this section of who's not eligible, because if we don't do that, then automatically they're eligible. And that occurred in 2009.
Any other senators? Any members have any further questions? Senator Martin?
Mr. Chairman, on Mr. Backus's comments, I wasn't on the committee in 2009. Instead of leaving it to the commissioner's discretion, saying, well, you have to admit anyone other than these folks, and now saying, well, we've got to change the list. You're just looking at the list, criminal vehicular operation. Unless the program has nothing for people who might be chemically dependent or something, it seems that might be a good place for them. And I just think, I'm just curious, because I think the old way might have been a smarter way to give the commissioner more discretion. If we want to limit some categories instead of, say, you shall take anyone who's not in these categories, that might make more sense. And I do have one particular, maybe it's a technical question, but if we are going this route, which we seem to be doing, on the new language on lines 17 and 18, I'm just curious how this is read. I mean, unless 5 years have elapsed from the date of discharge or expiration of the sentence, the date of discharge and the expiration of the sentence are probably not the same day. Is it 5 years from the lesser of the two or the earlier or the later of the two? Don't we have to clarify that if we are going to do this?
And your question is directed, Senator Marty,
to somebody to clarify, assuming And maybe I'm wrong about this, but I assume the date of discharge is very seldom the same date as the expiration of the sentence. We're saying you're ineligible for 5 years after one or the other. Does it mean you have to be the later of the 2 days or the first of the two? That's just a technical question, I guess.
Ms. Carlson or Mr. Backus, either one of you able to field that question?
Mr. Chair, members,
Mr. Backus.
I didn't draft this, so I don't know if they're referring to I think they're basically the same. They occur at the same time, discharge and expiration. I was wondering if maybe discharge meant release, but I don't think it does. So perhaps
Mr.
we could
Chair.
Just say expiration of one or the other?
Mr. Chair and Senator Marty, that was how it was intended to be the same date, discharge from supervision or expiration of that sentence.
So it is the same date. In other words, Mr. Chair, Ms. Carlson, I was assuming date of discharge was from the prison, not from discharge from supervision.
Ms. Carlson.
But you mean supervision.
Mr. Chair and Senator Marty, it was my understanding that they were the same date. But if the language needs to be modified to make that more clear, we certainly can work
Mr.
on that.
Mr. Chair, then just for clarification, if it's the same date, I'll just suggest we delete the date of discharge or from the date of just delete of discharge or.
And Senator Marty, line number?
Line 17. Okay. Maybe Senate Counsel could do that better, but mm-hmm. from the date of expiration of the sentence would read.
Mr. Backus?
Mr. Chair, yes, on page 1, line 17, I think you would, if you delete discharge or, so it really it would read elapsed from the date of expiration of the sentence.
I think you're saying discharge from incarceration.
Right. Senator Limmer, your thoughts?
I think that's an acceptable amendment by Senator Marty. It's in the hope of ridding ourselves of any confusion. I think Senator Marty might have been thinking, as some of us might have been thinking, that discharge might have meant discharge from incarceration, and the individual might be on a parole standing. And I think it really is the commutation of the entire sentence. So I believe by taking the words discharge or out of line 17 would be a friendly amendment.
Senator Marty moves that words discharge or be deleted from line 1.17. I stated that correctly, Senator Marty? All those in favor of Senator Marty's oral amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Amendment is adopted. Senator Limmer, do you have any other witnesses that you want to?
No. I don't know, though, if there's anyone that's opposing this legislation.
Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify either for or against Senate File 1747? Seeing none, are there any other questions? Senator Latz.
Mr. Chairman, I want to follow up on my earlier comments and see if maybe Senate Counsel can assist me here. But I'd like to not automatically exclude those for whom the second commitment to the custody of the commissioner was related to the commission of a nonviolent act. And so I think, you know, we could say something like at the end of line 1.18, unless the reason for commitment to the commissioner's custody is related to the commission of a nonviolent act or a nonviolent crime, or some words to that effect. I'm not sure if I've got the exact terminology to fit there. And this also, I'm just kind of thinking out loud on this, but the concept of a rebuttable presumption also, which adds a little discretion back into the commissioner's hands. But, you know, the ones who do become eligible and participate in this program, they still, based on the other criteria that are here, or disqualifying criteria that are here, they still have to have been model prisoners all the way through before they qualify for this. You know, no discipline, you know, of the sort that's listed here, as well as having the requisite history. So My recollection from 2009, I wasn't on the committee either, but I recall, at least maybe I was sitting here waiting for another bill to be heard or something, a lot of discussion about the fact that there were 180 beds and they weren't being fully utilized, and so there was concern that the then commissioner of corrections was exercising too much discretion to exclude people from the program, and it was the intent of the legislature to fully utilize the available bed space for this program. Hence the statute that says everyone gets in unless you get disqualified, and maybe the pendulum swung a little bit too far, I don't know, at least in terms of the statute. I'm comfortable with the commissioner exercising, whoever the commissioner happens to be, having some leeway to exercise some discretion. There may be some prisoners that, even if they meet the criteria for eligibility, don't belong in it. And there may be some who are doing so well that maybe they ought to have a waiver available for some of the disqualifying criteria because they would be good public safety benefits to them participating in the program. Something perhaps like what Senator Marty talked about, CVOs are principally chemical dependency type crimes, and if you address some of those underlying alcoholism issues or other chemical dependency issues, a person can become a much better risk.
Any other questions or comments by members?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Limmer.
Mr. Chair, I agree with Senator Latz. I think from my basic perspective, I believe in giving a commissioner a little more discretion on the part of the management of his charges. And in a case like this, just so we're aware, I'm planning on laying this bill on the table, lay it over, for an inclusion in a, for lack of a better term, an omnibus corrections bill, and that we can continue this discussion. But what I'd like to do is I wanted to broach the subject with the committee first, and if there's suggestions, I certainly would welcome that. And so I know that the department was kind of picking up on signals from others in state government wishing to be more prescriptive, and I know that they're trying to satisfy that. But I think it probably is in need of more discussion, and so we'll be laying 1747 on the table.
Senator Limmer, I've got a note to myself here regarding an effective date of this bill.
Oh.
Mr. Backus, do you have a comment for us on that?
Mr. Chair, members, I discussed this earlier with the department. I believe they would like this. I think the idea would be to add an immediate effective date to the bill, and I could read that if you'd like to add that. It would be on page 2 after line 21, insert. The head note would read effective date, and it would then read, this section is effective the day following final enactment, period.
Senator Limmer, your thoughts?
That's fine by me, Mr. Chair.
Senator Marty.
Not on that point, but Mr. Chair.
Let me stop just
go
one
ahead,
moment.
Go ahead if you want to.
Does anybody have any comment or thoughts regarding the effective date? Do we need a motion to include that? I would assume. Senator Limmer?
Oh, that's right. I was thinking that Senator Backus was in the room.
Senator Backus.
Mr. Chair, I move that the Senate File 1747 be amended with the language that was described by Mr. Backus after lines 221, heading effective date immediately after enactment or something to that effect.
Do the members have it clear in their minds as to this proposed oral amendment? Any questions? All those in favor of the Senator Limmer's oral amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? The amendment is adopted. Senator Martin.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Limmer, I'm glad you're doing what you're suggesting, because I have a feeling, just listening to the discussion, that the department was taking what they heard the legislature say several years ago, and I think it would be more appropriate, as you suggested, to have a conversation with them about maybe there's a way to do a little more discretion so we're not back here 3 years from now saying, oh, we really should be allowing these folks back in. And I appreciate your pulling it and talking with them before you put it in.
Mr. Chair and Senator Marty, the Senator opportunity Lumber. For discussion is endless on this type of subject. And I don't like buying the same real estate twice either. So.
Okay, any other further comments, questions?
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Lex.
I think Senator Limmer likes buying and selling the same real estate twice.
As long as the commission's involved.
Little inside baseball. Okay, hearing no further questions, it's Senator Limmer's wish to lay this matter over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill.
That's right. Thank you, committee. Mr.
Thank you, Senator Limmer.
Thank you very much.
Senate File 1759 regarding Corrections Department report on performance measures. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Glad to be here. Mr. Chairman, the bill that you have before you is an opportunity to streamline a little bit of our bureaucratic effort on behalf of or by our government agency. I would submit that not every report that is submitted is important enough that we need to see it as frequently as we do. And so the bill before you would remove the mandate for a report that the Department of Corrections is presently required to submit. I will ask Assistant Commissioner Ogrosky to describe exactly what it is that they would like to accomplish, but I will note also that there is a fiscal savings that has been identified in this process of $8,000. So anywhere we can find savings on behalf of the taxpayers, it's worth trying to find.
Sir, or efficiencies. Why don't my bills have positive financial aspects like yours?
You're the chairman. I don't know why.
All right. Commissioner Ogrosky,
thank you.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Lisa Ogrosky. I'm the Assistant Commissioner of Operations Support for the Minnesota Department of Corrections. Every other year, the agency produces a performance report. And in this report, we give you statistics and information on how our agency is doing in areas such as recidivism, per diems, other things about offender discipline, health care costs, health care services, mental health services, and so on. In 2009, the House had noticed that we were reporting on targets for some of our performance measures, and there were different areas where we were reporting these measures and targets. One of them was prior Governor Pawlenty's accountability website, and another place we report on our performance measures and targets is in our biennial budget. A legislator noticed that these targets did not match one another. And it had to do with the timing of when information was updated. And at that time, there was a suggestion that we needed to do a pre-performance report. So on every other year, we would do a performance report. And so in the odd years, it was recommended and passed that we create a report to report on what we were going to report the next year. And so it was all the same data, but it was asking us to report it a year in advance and establish targets and then report on those targets the next year. So it's kind of a duplication of efforts.
Let me get this right, Ms. Ogrosky. The report that's designated here that we're scratching off is listed in another report, a larger report. And that comes out how often? Every a biannual or is it an annual?
Mr. Chair, it's every 2 years.
Every 2 years. All right. And this report, by looking at lines 2.7, the report that is a smaller window would be due each odd number year as well. So it's not even keeping up with an annual basis. It's an every other year report, just like the biannual report would give us, but in a larger fashion.
Mr. Chair, that is correct.
All right. Is there further discussion on Senate File 1759? Hearing none. Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Latz, I just wanted to bring to your attention on the page 2 of the fiscal note under assumptions, the last item says an effective date is not specified, but it's assumed it will be effective the day following enactment. I just wanted to bring that to your attention in case that was what you had intended here. I have no idea, but.
Mr. Chairman, yes, that is my intent, and I'd make a motion at this time to add an immediate effective date.
Mr. Backus?
Mr. Chair, members, it would be the same amendment as the last one. It would be page 2 after line 22. It insert the headnote reads effective date, and it would say this section is effective the day following final enactment.
So Senator Newman would move the amendment as described by Mr. Backus. Is there any further discussion regarding that amendment? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion carries. Senator Latz.
Mr. Chairman, I know that with the fiscal note here, I think by the Senate rule, this bill would have to go to finance. I don't know if you anticipated that your as yet unnamed, still forming omnibus bill would also have to go to finance, but I wouldn't want this to cause an extra stop for the bill that you're putting together. So I'll leave it up to the chair whether you prefer that this travel alone or be joined in with your other bill.
Senator Latz, I think this bill should be laid over along with the previous one for a possible inclusion in an omnibus corrections bill. And Senator Roebling is desirous of any knowledge of any changes in our financial picture. So no matter if we could do it separately or not, we'd still have to make a stop there. So that's the direction I've been given. So
that's fine. I'd be happy to make the stop without you having to tag along on this bill if that would assist you.
Yeah.
But whatever your wishes are, I just didn't want to.
You'll be invited to attend if you'd like.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Senate File 1759 is, Mr. Turner, could you explain the fiscal note just for the record? And how is it affected?
Mr. Chairman, members, yeah, real quickly, this provision was enacted in 2009. There was no appropriation attached to it. DOC agreed to absorb the cost. So it could be argued that DOC would agree to absorb the savings. If we want to vacuum up the savings, the fiscal note represents the effort involved to put together this this report, and I gather it's the effort of 10 or 15 different people. It's very difficult to quantify. They came up with an $8,000 quantitative effort. If we want to vacuum up the savings, we would need a Section 2, and we'd have to amend laws 2011 and detract $8,000 from the operation support appropriation. I doubt that Senator Roebling is going to do that. However, for consistency, the bill has been requested by the Department of Finance to go over all bills with savings or costs.
Any further discussion? Senate File 1759 is laid over. There is no further business before the committee. The committee stands adjourned.
Thank you very much.